folks, and welcome to the June 20th, 2015 edition of the World Labor Hour, broadcast over the airwaves at WEFT Champaign 90.1 on the FM dial and streaming at weft.org. And we got a full studio here today. We got a bunch of topics we're going to get into, but we'll start it off. Here's Gus with some of our underwriting.
This hour programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois' Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois' Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at Channing Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon, Urbana. For more information, visit www.centralillinoisjobswithjustice.org. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. The Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice, both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio.
All right. Thanks, Gus. And Bill wanted to kind of correct something he was talking about during last week's show regarding the TPP and some acronyms and things. So, Bill?
Yeah, well, see, last week it appeared that there was a lot of people who were very happy because of this House vote that occurred involving the TPA, which is the Trade Promotion Authority for the TPP, which is the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Right.
The Trade Promotion Authority, which has passed, gives the fast track, what's called the fast track, where basically the bill is presented and it is voted on without any kind of debate, no chance for amendment or anything else. Okay. This is how they've done a lot of these trade measures, basically since Richard Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, what happened last week was there was a sort of an adjacent part of it, what they're called the Trade Adjustment Assistance, which is a thing that helps workers when their jobs are sent off to other countries. And basically what happens is they send them some junior college to learn about computers, and then they're basically lost for the rest of their lives. I mean, I know a lot of people this has happened to.
Yeah.
There was a plant in Monticello called General Cable.
Right.
Sometimes known as Generous Cable. And it was an IBEW union plant. Mm. It was the flagship plant, actually, for this company. And it got sent off to Mexico about 15 years ago. And I know a lot of people, they've never recovered from that. They just never had the opportunity, even with these trade adjustment assistance type things. All right. Well, so what happened was House Democrats got this assistance bill held up, and Nancy Pelosi says, well, at least we're slowing down fast track. But I just didn't think that last week it warranted all the joy that it seemed to raise on the left and excitement, because like she said, it's just a slowing down of it. And the plans were, well, they're probably going to adjust some things in it and then it'll be cool.
You know? Well, they ended up, bringing it back up in the House this week, right? On Thursday.
Yeah.
And passing it.
Yeah, it says here the House passed TPA narrowly on Thursday. And okay, key vote in the Senate on Tuesday.
My story says that the TPA bill was attached to another bill, a House Resolution 2146, which was Defending Public Safety Employees Retirement Act, which made important improvements to firefighters' retirement security. So they ended up putting the TPA.
Wow.
And the firefighters union is very upset that this is how they ended up passing the TPA, by putting it on top of that.
God, bill. Man, have they just abused these first responders
right.
politically? Yeah, right. Everybody does. It's just ridiculous.
So like you say, it passed by a narrow 218 to 208 margin.
Why didn't they call it the Mom and Apple Pie Firefighter Protection Act or something?
I don't know. 28 Democrats voted for this fast track, and it says here twice. This is coming from something from Daily Kos, you know. In fact, one a gentleman out of Illinois, Mike Quigley, from up in the Chicago area there, voted for it twice. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, another one who's voted for this now twice.
Well, she's like the head of the DNC, isn't she?
Something like that.
Well, I mean, and then this is just getting so complicated.
Right. The way they attach it to different bills and stuff you know?
And that's something I really wish, maybe we need some kind of constitutional amendment about, because I really don't appreciate that they got a bill through where my pension can be cut after I start collecting it because it was attached to the budget bill that had to be passed.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Man,
ridiculous way of doing business in this country. But,
you know, omnibus, anything says omnibus is...
And the whole fast track
idea.
You're
going to throw you under the bus one way or the other.
The whole fast track idea is not for the people at all. You know?
No. And that's the way they want it.
Negotiated in secret like that. You know,
like I said, who started it? Richard Nixon.
Yeah. I mean, but come on. I mean, it's no surprise that they want to do these things where they fast track things and overlook the people. I mean, when they wrote the original Constitution, they put in there on purpose that we're going to have electoral college to elect the president. We don't trust the everyday people to make major decisions or to control, have any type of autonomy on their own lives. We're going to make those decisions for them. So all these things get traced back to that original Constitution, which still is the supreme law of this country.
Well, the Senate was originally not voted for. Either.
Exactly.
And the Senate would be the group that would break the tie if you had one in the Electoral College.
Exactly.
At the same time. Yeah.
Well, let's get to another major story from this week, you know, and I think Gus has a few stories kind of he's going to all pull in together here. All
right. Yeah, well, the first thing that we have to do, of course, because one of the things I'm that is very disheartening about the recent massacre at the Emmanuel AME Church is the way that the media has been just blowing up the shooter's name, what they do, their background, their history, and the victims have become faceless at this point. That's what the American media does. They take people and they make them faceless. They make them passive objects in their own narrative. So the first thing I want to do here is to actually honor the nine deceased black men and women who were killed on Wednesday night at the Emmanuel Church. So I'm going to read their names off. And I refuse to call the shooter by his name and give him any more publicity, because that's all that what they're doing is focusing so much on him. So the nine deceased are Clementa Pinckney, who was 41 years old, Sharonda Coleman Singleton, who was 45 years old, Cynthia Hurd, who was 54 years old, DePayne Middleton Doctor, who was 49 years old, Tywanza Sanders, who was 26 years old, Myra Thompson, who was 59 years old, Ethel Lee Lance, who was 70 years old, Daniel L. Simmons, who was 75 years old, and Susie Jackson, who was 87 years old. So those are the nine deceased who are now gone forever because of a person who actually said, I'm here to create a race war. I want to kill black people. I sat here and I joined this. So what we actually have going on here is a conscious decision making process to murder people who are black. So this idea that people are asking these questions about, maybe he's mentally disturbed, maybe there's some type of mental illness here, that is a horrible, horrible, horrible way to kind of deflect the major issues going on in this country right now. We cannot continue to let people off these psychopathic racist murderers off the hook when they target African Americans and other groups of people and murder them and call it a mental illness. He had a plan in place that he had talked to people about, and then he left and tried to go away somewhere. He had planned all this out. So that mental defense garbage is tearing apart this country, because nobody wants to really ask the questions of why somebody has the ability or the mindset to do something like this. It's the systemic issue that we have to face when we're dealing with these types of racist murderers and mass murders. I mean, I'm just being honest with you. And the comments from the president are incredibly, incredibly disheartening as well, because he kept reiterating gun control, gun control, gun control. But that takes away from the complexity of the issue moving forward, that this was a person who had a idea of racism in his mind and committed an act of racial terror. It's the same thing that happened back in 1874 in the Vicksburg Massacre, where a group of white men went into an area and killed over 300 black people in Vicksburg and took their political positions. They made a conscious political decision to remove black people from a space. That's what happened, and that's what set off the Jim Crow era, and that's what ended Reconstruction, and a whole bunch of other things happened. There was a political decision by a group of men to take black people away. Why are we not looking at this the exact same way? This was an assassination, because he said, I was there to kill people. I had a targeted group. So all the stuff that the media is putting out there about what's happening with these deceased nine people and the Charleston massacre, we need to broaden the discussion, and we need to really dig deeper, because these things are not going away. They're going to continue to happen until we address it the right way.
Well, what I thought was really interesting, most of the accounts that I read about this guy talked like he was really bad in school. I think maybe he didn't really drop out. He just never really showed up that much, and was poorly educated, but somehow he was real knowledgeable about, Southern African history with, you know, wearing his,
flag and
those patches, you know, where's he? That's just it. And that definitely points to a big cultural thing there that, he was aware of that somehow.
Yeah. And seeing his Facebook statuses and pictures and stuff, he's posing with African Americans. He's talking to people about his plans and the things he wants to do. I mean, the issue that we have in this country is that we want to, number one, we want to individualize hate crimes, which is a complete and utter disgrace, because we know that hate crimes stem from an atmosphere. Fear of hate.
Yeah.
This system facilitates that type of behavior.
Yeah.
And we need to address it as being a systemic issue, and not, oh, he's just a bad C who had a mental issue that decided to shoot somebody. He did this one time. Why does it keep happening over and over again? And these are only the publicized stories. I mean, there's a story a few weeks ago, I think it was, where somebody had killed about four or five people in the house. Oh, no, I mean, I'm just saying, and just given the idea that this is just an isolated incident is really hurting how we can fix the issue and go and have a progressive change. So that's the first thing that's a major problem with this story. And the second big thing is that they're trying to take this away from the idea that this man was making a political decision. Cause I argue that this was a political decision. I want to kill black people. And the things he said to the woman, that you are, and the man, you are raping our women. You have to go. Right. He said, you have to go. That is a political statement that he is making before taking somebody's life. That's an assassination.
Well, it's an act of terrorism, domestic terrorism.
Exactly. It's domestic terrorism. But the president won't say that. The president won't say that. Hillary Clinton, who all of a sudden now is now Mrs. Race Woman, won't say it. I mean, I'm utterly just out of my mind here at what's going on in this country. I mean, yeah, she's going out saying, no, we have to do something Sister about race. She's now coming out saying we have to do something about race, when in fact she and her husband attacked President Obama during the primaries in 2006. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So now all of a sudden she's Mrs. Race. I don't buy that. The point is that I want to hear some people step up and speak that we have a domestic terrorist issue that goes against black people and poor people, women, and other disadvantaged groups.
Right.
And all of it stems from the way the political economy is set up, because these groups are marginalized and targeted by either police or by vigilantes. This was vigilante terrorism.
And like you say, it's not just blacks, it's poor.
Yeah.
It's women, you know. It's a lot of oppressed groups in this country.
It's the homeless. There are tons of stories that are coming out now about that.
So who do you go to for these problems? I mean, because it's been an ongoing problem so long, to the point where who do you talk to about these things and what's going to be done about it? Because obviously this is okay, and they're going to keep going with this. Okay, well, he was sick. He had a mental issue. Okay. That has nothing to do with anything, because I got a couple of issues, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm not gonna go and kill somebody.
That's why I'm not even, anybody that makes that argument, I'm not even a situated with, because the story goes in the fact that he had a plan, he made decisions, he tried to escape. Yeah. And let's not forget the fact that when he was captured, He has three square meals a day now. The police didn't try to shoot him. They took him out of the car. I mean, like he's safe now. He's living a very cushioned life at this point. Where's his bulletproof vest now? If it was an African American that was moving along in that side point, he would have 30 holes in him. Yeah. So again, like I said, this is
well. There's the other explanation besides mental illness. You know, and obviously this was not somebody who just snapped. It's somebody who'd been talking about these things for some time and so on and so forth. But, then there is also sort of a class analysis of this, and it's the same old, you know, thing. These white guys, they used to rule the world, and, you know, over the last couple of generations, that's just not happening. And so they're frustrated and they feel like that they don't have their birthright.
They
want to
take the country back.
They're being aided and abetted by one entire TV news channel called Fox News. And beyond that, now with the internet, all the conspiracy things, websites such as Stormfront, so on and so forth. I would like to see what his search histories are and things.
Well, you know, they already pulled that up, and they said, and they said within a week's span that he had visited a white supremacist website.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's been true for most of the shooters who have targeted black people in the past 10 years.
And there's another thing too, and tying in with the police, you will see, I've seen and heard descriptions of on talk radio shows, like different police, chat rooms, websites, Facebook pages, and so on and so forth were just horrendously, terrible racist, you know, things are popping up all the time, and it is a culture. In fact, I read a paper in the 1980s that was, I think it was written in the 1970s, where two anthropologists rode around with cops in Southern California for about a year, and they were talking about how terribly the police referred to everybody else, basically, especially the people that they dealt with in general. And that's just, and it's probably much worse now, and it sounds like it's much more racialized than it was even back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to answer Angel's question, I think the biggest thing that we can do as a people moving forward and taking this issue is that we have to hold our public officials accountable. That this is something that they cannot skirt around. They cannot make up these diversion stories. They can't make up these diversion discussions. They need to have a real, frank, honest, and difficult discussion that this system is broken. Where this can happen, and he gets locked up. Okay, he gets locked up, and let's say he's found guilty, and let's say something that they put him away. What is to stop this from happening again? That's the problem, because this system is facilitating this type of behavior, but the public officials do not want to take that burden on and admit our system is broken. The thing that we created 300 years ago, when everything was made to be unequal on purpose, actually doesn't work 300 years later. I don't understand. Well, I do understand, but that's just something that they have to really try to deal with. And the way that we can make them deal with it is that we show up, we organize ourselves, we show up to things, and we call them out, we make them speak on things. I mean, that's the only
thing gets done.
Yeah, until something gets done. I mean, that's the way history works. When people speak up against something, they challenge things, that's when things change. Because this is a scary situation, because he's gonna be gone.
Oh, yeah.
But it could happen again.
But he, they had some of the family members of the people that died, they had a lady saying that she forgave this man. Yeah. And you know what? That man stood there with no physical or mental emotion on his face. This is a cold-blooded killer.
And see, and just
could sit there with those people for an hour.
Yeah. You know? And just in that context, you know, for whatever discussion they were having too.
Right. In Bible study.
Yeah.
And then get up and start pulling.
You know what? I don't even, I'm not even, it may not,
failing.
It may be unpopular, but I'm just going to be honest in that there's no way that, you know, I'm really getting tired of these I forgive them speeches. after these people murder and take somebody's life away? Because what's happening is these black elite groups are going into these people's ears and telling them to be nice and to not, and to not be angry and not be violent. Don't, like, I'm getting sick of that, because what it's doing is it's pacifying the people. It's pacifying the people from being upset that somebody's, a human life is being taken away. A human life has losing their job. A human life is losing their money. All these things continue to happen. They tell you just to forgive somebody. I forgive you. That's utterly ridiculous, because we are experienced. That's a way to pacify people so that human rights violations can't continue. Because, the, I mean, let's be honest, the elites have some ownership in the ruling class with them. It's utterly ridiculous. I'm tired of hearing that. I don't forgive him for killing those people, and nobody should.
Well, here's how cold it is. You remember, was it 2 or 3 weeks ago when there was a big to-do in Texas somewhere about all those people were protesting this mosque or something, and they were standing outside, and they were going to have the drawing contest and all this and that. I think I don't know, a lot of bikers or something. But anyway, a couple of those people who were out there protesting against Islam, they did go in and spend time and worship, you know, with. And they came out and they said, no, they will never do act like that again. And then to contrast that with this, you know, young man who at that age, I mean, these, I had the impression these were older, probably 30s or 40s, but somebody 21 years old who I think you can really impress to go in somewhere and spend all that, like you said, that hour, you know, in that type of an intimate, respectful, atmosphere setting, and do that. And then also when you look into his past, he did have black friends. And, they talk about him. I mean, it is bizarre. I guess he just wants to be, I mean, he wanted segregation.
Somebody was in his ear, you know, somebody was talking to this man. And obviously, like you said, it doesn't just start with this man. This is what he's used to. He's been around
this system facilitates behavior. Remember, this country, what he did is something this country has been doing for centuries. And it goes back before the Vicksburg Massacre. I mean, after the Stono Rebellion, they killed countless slaves and put their heads on pikes so that people can see their heads when they drove by after the Nat Turner Rebellion.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's doing anything about it. So, I mean, it's okay. You can just go and read up on some things, and then you can go and kill people, and it's going to be okay. They'll just say that you're crazy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And that's the scapegoat, is that he has a mental illness when he goes in with a plan to do these things. So what I'm saying is that, and to sum this up, is that we have a systemic issue, and that we cannot individualize what this shooter did to these people. We cannot individualize it, because it's part of a broader problem that has historical precedent. This is something that is normal behavior for racists. Like Bill was saying earlier about the redeemers, the redeemer mentality. That's what they did in the South during Reconstruction. They went and they took back their political offices by murdering blacks. They would go into buildings and kill all the black people. And they would take their positions. They would go in when somebody was going to vote, and they would commit violent acts against them, sometimes killing them, sometimes not. You see what I'm saying? So I'm saying this incident has a historical precedent.
Oh, it does.
It's a systemic issue.
Like I said, who do you go to about it, and what's going to be done about it? Because long as we as black people don't do anything, don't say anything, it's going to continue to happen.
Well, we just, like I said, we have to continue to press, but the good thing about this is thinking of the optimism is that we do, during this time period, because of what's been happening in the past 2 years with the police brutality and the other issues, that this has awakened the masses. People are awake now. So this is not going to be something that people just go sleep over and just like it used to be back in the day. Yeah, people are awakened. So this is not over. It's only been 3 days since the incident, and people are raising a lot of questions that we have to continue to raise, but now we have to press the public officials who were supposed to be servants to the people. They're not supposed to just be elected officials that hoard over us. Right. They're supposed to be public servants to the people. We have to press them. Yep. And that's what we have to do. And we have to stop letting the black elite groups who don't have the best interests of the community at heart control our emotions and control our actions, because that's exactly what's been going on. I'm tired of hearing this "I forgive you" type stuff, because that's coming from them. And I'm tired of them talking about this legalism mess that doesn't work, working within the system. We have to do it from the community groups and fight that way.
You know what? I was thinking that with me being up in office, I would put anybody that kills someone, I would put them all in, all together. Police too. If you kill somebody, you're going to jail. It's not going to be no special place for you. None of that. If you kill somebody, you need to deal with the time for that. It doesn't matter who you are, white, black, Chinese, Mexican. If you kill somebody, you need to pay the price for that. Period.
Even without the so-called justice system, the question remains, why, what type of system breeds a person to think that they can assassinate 9 people in a church setting only because they are black? Not because he wanted to just kill random people, not because he was upset, not because, I mean, just he explicitly stated black people. That's a political decision, a political assassination. We have to treat it as such.
Definitely. That's
like we were talking about last weekend as well. If you're not safe in the hospital, you're not safe in the hospital, you're not safe at church, you're not safe anywhere. So, and I have people that tell me, well, Angela, why don't you go to church? Okay, well, I don't want to die going to church. But it's just that, I mean, you're not safe anywhere and nobody's doing anything. And this problem is getting worser, and long as it keeps happening and nothing's being done about it, it's going to continue to get worse and worse.
Why don't we take a quick musical break here, and we'll be back here on the World Labor Hour, WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on the FM dial, streaming at weft.org. Here on the World Labor Hour, of course, Bob Marley with the classic Get Up, Stand Up. And we're going to open up the phone lines here. So if you guys got some...
I got something to prime perhaps a potential caller.
All righty.
We're talking about South Carolina here. In South Carolina, I believe it was in 2005, 2006, the U.S. Labor Party gathered 30,000 signatures and was on the ballot. And then somehow everything, the website, was still there for quite some time. Maybe I'll do a search for it here real quick. But the party just completely fell apart on every level.
This was as recent as what, 2005, you say, in South Carolina?
Well, it was definitely by 2006.
Huh.
The Labor Party, they collected, I believe it was 30,000 signatures.
Wow.
I'll do a little search.
So yeah,
here.
Phone lines are open. You can give us a call, 217-359-5483, and we'll do our best to get you on there. And there we go. I think we got a caller calling in on the other phone line. So, hello, you're on the air.
Jim Hyman calling.
Oh, thanks,
Carol Amons this morning, I think, was quite eloquent in this South Carolina thing. She said this guy was not acting alone. Now, look back to Timothy McVeigh and the destruction of the Oklahoma City building. He wasn't acting alone either. They have to go after the entire organization that put him up to it. I don't believe a minute he was acting alone.
Right.
I agree.
And as far as systemic racism, Gus is absolutely right on this. It goes back forever. It's a fear that white people have over the centuries of injustice that we have done to black people, that we're afraid of them.
That's a good point,
and
Jim.
It's been going on. That's the real in my opinion. Thank you for taking my call.
All right. Yes. Thanks, Jim. Excellent
and just
point.
And just to clarify when, from an earlier point, when I said, the black elite groups, I want to make sure I call them out because I don't want it to be any type of, diversion or anything. Like I'm talking about the Jesse Jacksons and the Al Sharptons and those different and their types of organizations and groups that go out there and they pacify the angry black masses. You know, that's who I'm talking about. So make sure we have that clarified.
I hope people had a chance to listen to Aaron Ammon's excellent Higher Ground program this morning. He spent a long time talking with Professor Lou Turner from the U of I on there. And, you know, they touched on the issue that some of this is based on the capitalist system of always trying to take advantage of the oppressed groups, not necessarily black, like you mentioned earlier.
That's what
poor, the women, you know, I mean, that's part of the capitalist system.
And that's what it stems from, because capitalism created the social construction of racism, ideologies, and practices to continue to make, to maximize profits and surplus value. So, of course, by creating these, keeping these divisions between races and creating these ideologies and subordinating black people specifically and other groups as well, then I'm going to continue to profit off of capitalism, regardless of whatever form the means of production are in, whether it is agricultural capitalism, which shifted to industrial capitalism, which shifted now to neoliberal global capitalism. Mm-hmm. I mean, regardless of the shifts, it's going to continue to perpetuate these ideologies to keep the workers divided. And right. by doing that, we use vigilantes and we use police. Right. Plain and simple. And these, and during historical moments like the Civil War and like Reconstruction and like, the Gilded Age and when blacks moved into the factories and things like that and unions became big and they created these new divisions of racial ideology and hatred against different groups of people then. I mean, like I said, there's so many different bases in history and also what's going on today for these issues that create the foundation for this murderous rampage.
It's directly related to the police violence that we're seeing the last year or two.
Which we're now at over 500 at the, in June by this year alone. 500 killed and 4 killed within the last week.
I know. I heard a little bit of last week's program when we were talking and you said, it's about 3 a day at this point in this country.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, folks, if you missed last week's program, you can probably find it at radioforall.net.
It is uploaded to Radio for All.
And that's Radio digit 4.
Number 4.
All.net.
.net. Yes.
Okay. Now, and something else, I've mentioned the South Carolina Labor Party. This is from the Wikipedia. Number one, I also referred to a U.S. Labor Party. That's a big mistake. The U.S. Labor Party occurred in the 1970s and it was run by Lyndon LaRouche. So we're not referring to that party at all. We are talking about the Labor Party, just the Labor Party. Okay. And I was a member of it since the early 90s when it was the Labor Party Advocates. And I remained a member, a dues paying member up until it finally collapsed. And I didn't get any letters from them anymore. But anyway, in December 2005, the South Carolina Labor Party announced that it would seek ballot status in South Carolina and run a candidate in the 2006 legislative elections. Labor Party News quoted Leonard Riley, president of Charleston International Longshoremen's Association Local 1422, as saying, quote, given the results of the last few elections, I think the workers of South Carolina would jump at the opportunity to consider a Labor Party, which would guarantee an uncompromising voice, notice that, uncompromising voice, for the working people on their issues. Okay. Although South Carolina permitted electoral fusion, Labor Party pledged not to endorse candidates of any other party. Party officials acknowledged that the choice of South Carolina may seem unusual. The state has the second lowest concentration of union workers in the United States. However, party officials said the relatively high unemployment rate, the decline in the textile industry, and the indifference of the state Democratic and Republican parties to the interests of the working people, African Americans, and women created a political space for the Labor Party. The party submitted 16,500 signatures on July 11th, 2006. If 10,000 of the signatures were valid, the party would be qualified for the 2000 to 2008 elections. This effort was apparently unrelated to the concurrent attempt of the Working Families Party, who will do fusion with the Democrats and will compromise, as we've seen in New York State.
Yeah.
Besides that, as a single person, I am annoyed at the name Working Families Party.
You're a family of one, Bill. And a big
to
happy
gain,
family.
You're part of
no,
family.
No. See, I have no legitimacy in American culture.
Me neither.
To gain me ballot neither. Access. Yeah. All right. In South, that's another issue.
We'll start our own family here.
Yes. The West in South family. Carolina, at a state that, or I've talked about it. Anyway, the party suspended active operations in 2007, but a group said affiliated with the party nominated one candidate for the South Carolina House in 2010. The candidate, Brett Bercy, received 442 votes, or 3.6%. In December 2012, Mark Dudzik, who is a friend of the show, has been interviewed here, wrote an article in which he said confirmed that the party had suspended operations in 2007. Anyway, and you can read that article if you go to laborparty.org, which is a website that still exists. And it was, it's www.thelaborparty.org. It was moribund for a while, but it does have the 2012 article by Mark Dudzik and some other things you might want to look at. So that was a little bit of a diversion there.
Interesting.
But I think it's interesting that it was in South Carolina where they made their greatest inroads.
Oh, yeah.
And their reasoning behind it. And then you look at what I was saying earlier about the other class, the sort of a weird class cultural analysis of this is a frustrated white male not having his place. Well, perhaps instead of just having Rush Limbaugh on the radio and maybe having some Labor Party people to work with or something at some point in his life, it could have pulled him in another direction and gave him a more positive way to go. You know, that's a very possibility too, and that we just don't have those things. And that's where I think where the left has been really negligent in not creating better on-the-ground organizations, relying too much on court rulings since the 50s and 60s.
Yeah. Very much so.
And things like that, and not having a good ground game. Meanwhile, we're being flanked on the ground by right-wing churches and on-the-ground organizations meeting racists with their internet presence and so on and so forth, and they're not being See, the thing was, what the left tried to do was they got the government to do things. Now, you do have, like in Pike County, we do have some things out there like Action or something, but it's all government grant related. It's not independent. Meanwhile, you have churches, and churches, they even have dating services for people and motorcycle clubs, and you can get a good job maybe from somebody who's in your right wing nut job church, you know?
But no, I think that's the best. I think that really is the best point, really, to talk about the issues involving why we're not able to combat this the way we should. Bill brought the best point ever, that they have taken legalism as being the major tactic of movements at this, for social movements at this point. And we all know that how can you fight for legalism or fight for legal justice in an inherently unjust and non-legal system? It doesn't work. And we've seen that in the histories when people have used legalism. Like I went back to the Black Elites, the NAACP and other groups like that have always embraced legalism, and I'm only wanted to use that tactic. They didn't like the on the ground stuff. And so that Bill brings up a good point. When did the left decide that legalism is now the biggest way that we can try to outgain things? I know the Socialist Party was very big in this idea of creating this political entity within the system to overtake the system, which really is kind of illogical, but that's a whole nother study. That's for Jim. But I mean, seriously, like we have to really think about these things. Like, when did the tactics change for the left to where they thought that they could actually win within an unjust system? It's an illogical fight.
Well, here's my old saying: if your organization moves its headquarters to Washington, D.C. Yeah. It's time to start a new one.
Right.
And by the way, folks, I did just like the Labor Party USA's Facebook page, and it looks really interesting, too. So, matter of fact, here's something for Anti-Capitalist Radio. Peace, love, and revolution. And now the advertisement. A specter is haunting the web. New Communist Party of America, Independent Workers League, People's Assembly to Defeat Austeria. Monday, Wednesday, this week around 4 p.m. or so, see more. I don't know, Anti-Capitalist Radio. So this is looking cool already.
Might there you go. This.
Yeah, I'm about to like the page too then.
That's Labor Party, I like parentheses, USA.
All right. We ready for a little musical break? Or Gus, you got some new stories?
One more thing before we go into the music break, that we do have to recognize that yesterday, of course, was the 150th anniversary of Juneteenth. Very, very powerful day in history. But it also raises a lot of questions. For those that don't know, Juneteenth is the 150th anniversary when slavery was technically deemed illegal in the United States, meaning you cannot hold a person against their will, except, you know, the stipulation is being in prison, other things like that. So that was the big day for when blacks considered that to be a day of freedom, a celebrating freedom.
That was when the word finally got to Texas, 2 years after the bill was passed.
Exactly.
2 years it took. Not 2 minutes in the internet age or the Twitter age, but two years.
Well, see, that's one of the reasons we had the Electoral College, too, or one of the excuses for it. You know, because we didn't have the communications to have direct voting.
Exactly, yeah. But that was something I wrote on in my master's thesis, was about Juneteenth and how it affected Galveston, Texas, and just the major celebrations and the fervor that a lot of the former slaves had when they went out, and they just went out and tried to find any job they could. They went out and tried to reconnect with their families. I mean, it was really a vision of the possibility that we are equal in this country now. So one of the questions I posed on Facebook yesterday, and the questions that I continue to pose people, is when we look back on Juneteenth and the idea that we should celebrate freedom, what exactly does freedom mean for the African American in this country? I mean, 150 years later, seriously, these are things I ask people. Do we actually have citizenship? Are we actually free in this country based off of our socioeconomic conditions and spaces? Are we free people? It's something that we really have to consider, because when people say they're celebrating freedom on Juneteenth, I ask them, what exactly does freedom mean to you? Because I argue that we have never experienced freedom in this country, and that democracy and freedom are the most contradictory terms used in U.S. history. Nice. I mean, it's something that we really have to raise, and it goes directly into the issues that we talked about.
Yep, I agree with that. I believe that what freedom was a long time ago. All it gave us was the power to walk around among people. Other than that,
I mean, even
there's no freedom.
I mean, even then, our mobility has always been restricted because they moved us into urban spaces and called it ghettoization.
Oh yeah, but you know what? That's what they got to keep us at a level, you know, because we're overpopulating and we wouldn't want to take over, you know.
That's pretty funny, yeah. Considering the fact that the black population has only gone up 1% since Juneteenth, because we were at 11% in June, of the U.S. population, and now we're only like at 13-point-something, or like early 14%. So yeah, we're overpopulated, like you said.
Yeah,
so we got to make sure we keep them in spaces.
Yeah.
And now
it's shifting
to the suburbs now. So
I did want to mention there's a Juneteenth celebration happening this afternoon, right at the Douglas Center.
It sure is.
Noon to 3 o'clock.
Yeah. So if you have a chance to come out and celebrate and get to know the great people in Champaign, please come out to the Douglas Center for the Juneteenth celebration. I'll probably stop by there later on. So
yep. Carol Ammons is going to be there this afternoon, several other people. So stop by the Douglas Park there, the Douglas Center, and celebrate.
Because it's a very proud day that we should celebrate, but I think that we should, by celebrating, we should also make sure that we critically challenge our position in this country and really ask questions so that we can get to the bottom of where do we go from here, especially in light of the massacre at Emmanuel Church.
Yeah, definitely.
What is freedom?
That's
I want to know the definition of that for our people, because we've been treated unfairly since the beginning. We have never had a chance at pretty much anything. So we've just been kept on a level And we're going to still be kept on a level until we, as black people, stand up for what we believe in.
All right. Here's a short.
With the working people.
Short musical break here. So Neil Young says keep on rocking in the free world there. So
and he's not too pleased with Donald Trump, who apparently gave a very Palin-esque speech, sort of. The comments I'd seen on it were kind of strange.
Well, we got a caller calling in, I think. Here, see if we can get him on the air again. WEFT, you're on the air.
Okay. I want to answer Angela's question here.
Okay.
Freedom and liberty are two entirely different things. Liberty is granted, but freedom is taken. Whenever you get out of court, the judge will say you have your liberty. They never say you have your freedom. That's the difference. Thank you for taking my call.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
So apparently liberty is conditional. And it's, I've always found it strange. It seems like, the right wingers tend to use the word liberty a lot. Haven't you noticed that? Like the Tea Party people, it's always, it's more liberty. That's
give me
sort
liberty
of more,
or give me death, you know. Yeah. Don't tread on me.
Don't take any liberties with that, please.
Yeah.
But by the way, we did get a Facebook message from, Paul Muth, and one of the biggest problems he has with the fast track on the, Trans-Pacific Partnership bill, that even though it is Trans-Pacific Partnership, it seems to be involved as, defining Israel as Israeli-controlled territories, including those that rightfully belong, that they took away from the Palestinians and the Syrians.
Yeah.
Okay. And, anyway, it also, the trade thing would oppose efforts by the European Union or other nations to boycott, divest from, or place sanctions targeting Israel, the Israeli occupation, or Israeli settlements. And I want to say something else about Israel, Palestine, and the Middle East. If you go to Labor Start, that's LABOUR,
correct,
.org, laborstart.org, and just, they have a whole page there, a whole section you can go to, and there's all kinds of strikes and everything going on all over there that you never hear about.
Every day.
People actually have lives there that don't only consist of fighting over some, I'm just saying right now, crappy
reports,
little desert scrap of territory.
Right. They have reports from like 150 different countries on there almost every day, from Korea, from Thailand, from, you know, all over the world. Amazing resource of information.
Right.
Laborstart.org.
Yeah. Right. And it, don't believe these TV networks when they say, well, we got to talk about that cute missing blonde girl forever and ever and ever because we have so much air time to take up. Because there's all kinds of stories that they just won't
Gus
touch.
Mentioned the word diversion earlier, and
diversion
I was waiting
story.
for Bill to bring up this week's latest diversion story.
That's
you know?
All they are. Diverting the people, diverting the pacifying the people.
What's this week's Caitlyn Jenner?
I do have a public service announcement, and this again I heard on Aaron Ammon's Higher Ground show this morning about training programs happening out at Parkland College for highway construction careers. It's actually a 15-week training program. You can find out more information by going to parkland.edu/highway construction. And this is funded by the Illinois Department of Transportation, And it says if you have a valid driver's license and you're 18 years old, have a high school diploma or a GED, can pass a drug test, and have an interest in working in the construction trades, they have these orientations going on out there Wednesday, July 8th and Thursday, July 9th at 2 p.m. And you may be able to qualify to get into these training programs. It's an intensive 14-week program to learn the skills necessary for acceptance into the highway construction trades and the opportunity for career with a high wage earning potential. So,
By the way, that's, as a laborer, it's $30, like 32 cents an hour plus another $10, $15, $20 of benefits over that.
Excellent.
Right now. I'm actually working on a heavy highway job right now.
So there's career opportunities for laborers, equipment operators, iron workers, carpenters, cement masons, electricians, pipe fitters, plumbers, painters. You can give a call out here to R.J. Rowland. He's the program manager, 353-2122, or you can email him at rrowland@parkland.edu. There's no job guarantees, but this is a valuable training program that you can get yourself into and perhaps find yourself a decent-paying career.
Yeah, well, perhaps we should interview this Roland person you just mentioned on this show. And also, there's a labor history class out of Parkland,
yeah.
And we've never talked to whoever teaches that. And as far as Parkland College goes, the building trades had made a concerted effort since the 1990s in being very involved at Parkland College. I have taken classes there for the laborers union, and I'm really glad that that's happening. And as far as distractions go this week, trending on Facebook. Whitehall, Ohio. Officer accidentally shoots and injures 4-year-old after firing a dog, officials say.
Oh.
Holocene extinction. Study says world in midst of 6th period of mass extinction. Okay. Number 3, Michael Anthony. Eddie Van Halen said he had to teach band's former bassist how to play. South Carolina Supreme Court, Judge in Charleston shooting case, was reprimanded for 2003 racial slur. I've read about that. But I mean, you know, I mean, Holocene extinction, man. I mean, the sixth largest extinction on the planet. This article, I read the article, credible scientists, we can go with it. We cannot live without a lot of other animals around here, you know? I mean, and plants.
You know,
the
Pope came
Soylent
out.
Soylent Green.
The Pope came out this week, and
people will be down to Soylent Green, just eating each other.
The Pope came out this week and talked about the man-made global warming and stuff, and part of our capitalist system that's driving us to lead lives that are consumption oriented.
Mass awakening of the people. Even the Pope is talking about it now.
See, here's the difference: a lot of the right wingers are Protestants. Okay, that come from a tradition of not free will, that everything's planned out. As a matter of fact, the early Puritans, they thought, well, if you're somebody who made a lot of money, that's just because you're a good person and God says you're supposed to make a lot of money.
Exactly.
You know, whereas the Catholic Church always believed actually in free will, where you are here to make moral decisions, you know, based on, you know, your religion, your relationship with God or whatever. And that is a difference. The Pope is saying, no, it is our moral decision whether to take care of this planet or not. Meanwhile, James Inhofe, you know, who's some right-wing nut Christian job or whatever from an oil state
climate change denier.
Well, God wouldn't let this happen.
Right.
You know, no, God will let you screw up.
Yes.
You're the one who has to make sure, and that's how you please God, by taking care of what he gave you.
Right.
And not just using it up and abusing it. And this is from an atheist.
Yep. Hey, we're running a little bit late here today on the World Labor Hour on WEFT in Champaign. But we got time to talk about a couple labor stories yet. Gus, you got something you want to?
Yeah, you know, outside of the stuff going on with the tragedy in Charleston, we got some updates on the economy. Right now, layoffs are ticking up right now. Thousands have been laid off in the past 2 months as employers continue to pursue job cuts internationally. also to preserve profits in the stagnant global economy. So not only is we in stagnation in America, but also the global economy is as well. A little more than a week ago, HSBC, which is the big global banking giant, announced that it would cut its staff by 19% in the next 2 years. By 2017, it aims to fire up to 50,000 people in order to try to achieve $5 billion in annual cost savings. These reductions are on top of a mass firing of 37,000 workers between 2010 and 2015. So like I said, you know, this is something that a lot, these are those diversion stories that Bill was talking about. Nobody is talking about right now that the economy is kind of, you know, of course they create a 280,000 jobs, like I said last week, but those jobs were mostly public, you know, low wage, low skill, no benefit work, and the rest of the jobs are disappearing at this point. They're covering for that. This is getting scary though, like,
You want to talk about the global economy and how they're not transparent to people here. A story came out this week from the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. Mm-hmm. And they said that Walmart has $76 billion in undisclosed overseas tax havens. You know, how can this happen? Walmart stores own more than $76 billion of assets through a web of units in offshore tax havens around the world. Though you wouldn't know it from reading the giant retailer's annual report, a new study has found that Walmart has at least 78 offshore subsidiaries and branches, more than 30 created just since 2009, and none mentioned in U.S. securities filings. Overseas operations have helped the company cut more than $3.5 billion off its income tax bills in the past 6 years. As I said, this come out from a study by the United Food and Commercial Workers, published Wednesday. A report by Americans for Tax Fairness found 90% of Walmart's overseas assets are owned by subsidiaries in Luxembourg and Netherlands, two of the most popular corporate tax havens, and units in Luxembourg where the company has no stores. So how can that be? They're hiding their money in Luxembourg. They don't even have any stores over there. This is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. They reported $1.3 billion in profits between 2010 and 2013 and paid a tax rate of less than 1%, according to the report.
Yeah.
You know, this is just ridiculous how these corporations get away with it. They say that Walmart does these loan schemes between these subsidiaries in these offshore countries and get to move this money around and stuff and leave it hidden over there so that we can't even touch it. It's just ridiculous how this happens.
That's status quo, though. That's how it's supposed to work. And of course, if Walmart ever fails, then all those CEOs are going to get bailed out. Are going to get billion-dollar bailouts
by the American taxpayers.
Exactly, because Walmart is such a huge profit.
Too big to fail.
It's too big to fail. Part two coming. And speaking of that, I mean, we have time for one more.
Sure.
We got to talk about Hillary Clinton.
Yes, we
got to talk about Hillary Clinton because she has, and I said this earlier, that she has now become a so-called race champion for blacks all of a sudden in her comments since the massacre now, even though we know how she really feels. Now she's also become a champion for the workers. Yeah, she is all of a sudden now this big champion. This is a quote from her about the Fight for 15. I want to be your champion. She talked to, and this was in a room full of 1,200 black workers who have been protesting and striking over the last few years about their low wage workplaces to demand a $15 an hour minimum wage. So set aside the fact that Hillary Clinton is a pretty unbelievable champion of low wage workers, those who know her history, because she has such a long relationship with Walmart,
a huge relationship
where she is reaping tons of benefits off of their horrible, horrible working conditions and business practices.
She was on their board for a while.
Exactly. As well, she was on the board of directors at Walmart from 1986 to 1992 and didn't say a word as the retail giant blocked workers' attempts to organize. I mean, seriously, and her days as Walmart's champion aren't behind her either. She used her position as Secretary of State under President Obama to visit India 3 times to try to convince the Indian government to reverse its ban on Walmart and other big box stores, bring them into the country because her pockets would get fatter.
Yeah. Well, I believe in India, it's illegal for any company that's not an Indian company to have a store.
Yeah, not at all.
Yeah.
And she tried to convince them not to, and of course they told her to kick rocks. So just to
I love all these people running for president, man, like Chris Christie. Yeah, vote for me so I can cut your Social Security.
Yeah.
You know, well, somebody else.
Scott Walker's running now, you know? So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Here's another one, too. One of my favorite. I was so happy to hear when he got in. I'm wearing my Rick Perry glasses right now.
The Rick Perry quotes are going to be classic, everybody. Please listen to Rick Perry.
This is
screw
from
himself up.
The Hill. An aide to Rick Perry claims the GOP presidential candidate misspoke when he referred to the mass shooting at historic black church in Charleston, South Carolina as an, quote, accident. Whoa. Speaking with Steve Malzberg of Newsmax, Perry criticized President Obama for using the massacre as an opportunity to raise the issue of gun reform. Where's the false flag? I haven't heard Alex Jones with that yet.
Oh, he's probably writing an article right now. Claiming, this afternoon.
He's kind of slow lately, though. Claiming the president was seeking to take the guns out of the hand, or, quote, take the guns out of the hands of everyone in the country. Quote, this is the M.O. of this administration. Perry continued, anytime there is an accident like this, the president is clear he doesn't like for Americans to have guns. So he uses virtually every opportunity, blah, blah, blah. Perry's Canada, Mr. blah, blah, blah. But anyway, Rick Perry, I can't believe he's running
and
again.
And that's why I can never be in politics. You have to be a disgusting human being to take this massacre and try to flip it for political gain.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, like, this is what those right-wing conservative nut jobs do at any moment that somebody shoots somebody in this country. They try to flip it over on the president and the Democratic Party about the gun control issue. And like I said, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's not unbelievable, but it's disgusting.
Any closing words here?
That's why there's a problem with the economy, because money isn't going to the right places.
Yeah, exactly. Any closing words, Bill?
Well, since Dave's not here, I'll say it. Power to the people.
There you go.
Power to
the people. Be safe and power to the people. And we're going to join the Union Edge already.
I'm not going to say be safe. I'm sorry. I know there's shootings on, but I do feel safe. Everywhere I am, I feel safe.
Good.
Thank you.
And power to the people. And we're joining the Union Edge already.
Well, I'm tired of paranoia, man. I felt my whole life. Yeah. Oh, they're going to bomb you with nuclear weapons.
Right.
You know,
right.
God, I'm sick
when
of it.
I was a
I
kid,
feel,
yeah.
I'm safe.
Go out in the hallway and hide your head between your arms and your legs.
We're safe from international powers,
like that, you know?
But we have domestic issues. I'm a bit scared. I'm not going to lie. It's ramping up in this country.
So, as Dave would say, and as all of us say here, power to the people. Yeah. We're joining the Union Edge already in progress.